Chapter 5. Insertion. What lies beneath. Poor El Amante looked at the ceiling with wide eyes as another explosion shook the walls of her underground home. A tracery of cracks had spread across it, daunting in their symbolism. Bombs were falling high above. Gelbrin City was taking great punishment. Amante had told Dalith's people their planet would survive and would tell them 1,000 times over if necessary. But during a recent data brief, she had seen the footage of the Imperial invasion of Vespertine, witnessing the horrific violence meted out by humanity's shock troops. A tiny part of her was unworthy enough to think that her words of reassurance might just be outright lies. Not many of Dalith's thriving water caste lived under the planet's surface. Most of her kind preferred the hubbub of the city plazas and took residences in the most populous of regions. But Amante was not like most of her kind. She cast a glance towards her liquid sculptures, arranged with great care upon the table. They were both her secret shame and her greatest joy, a constant symbol of the dichotomy at the centre of her soul. Ripples flowed across their surfaces, their shimmering light reflected upon the ceiling as the deep bass of explosions boomed above. It was unheard of for one of the water caste to pursue the art of sculpture. Acts of material creation were the exclusive province of the earth caste. Amante, driven by something inside her, had created them nonetheless. Something in her mind's eye had called them into being, and she had been inspired to give them form, much like Tau life donors were sometimes inspired to seek out the generation farms in the labyrinthine earth caste complexes beyond. The strange multiplicity of her skill set was why she had never experienced the blessed union of the Ta Lysera with her voice team, and why she never would. It was a connection so deep that her bondmates would uncover her secret in a matter of a few rota. For a Tau even to show aptitude in the arts of another caste was forbidden, let alone to hone that talent until it rivaled their birth-given skills. To stray between castes was to risk being named Vashya, a mark of disgrace and censure that could not be erased. It was a far graver sentence than the empty loneliness Amante had embraced as a precaution. Even a water caste ambassador had no chance of talking their way out of that. If the ethereals confirmed the accusation, the matter was settled, and the punishment inevitable. Those so named were taken away, ostensibly for attunement to the sacred tenets of the Tau Va. In Amante's experience, such individuals rarely came back, and those that did were so bereft of nuance they made the intelligences of their drone minders look sophisticated by comparison. She had secreted a pulse pistol in her quarters a long time ago, just in case they came for her in the night. Something massive struck the complex walls above, shaking dust from the ceiling and making Amante start. The cracks in the ceiling grew wider still. A thought bubbled up to the surface of Amante's consciousness. Perhaps it would be better for the ceiling to come down on her, to bury her and her sculptures forever, so that none could know of her caste treason. The far wall of her chambers collapsed in an explosion of rubble, and she screamed nonetheless. A giant burst through, horrific in proportion. At first, she mistook it for a demolitions machine, for it was fully twice her size, and it had a bulbous convex head emblazoned with a strange icon. Then the thing turned, and she realized that what she had mistaken for a head was actually shoulder armor, a pauldron that had hidden a grotesque face. Eyes full of hatred stared down from a knotted mass of muscle and fury, as intense as the worst of nightmares. Rivets had been punched into the thing's crested head, and a thin gruel of blood and spit ran from its wound-like mouth. It growled like an animal, raising a boxy pistol so crude and heavy it could break her without firing a shot. Amante screamed again, scrabbling back on all fours and kicking over an oval table so it stood between her and the creature. Her precious water sculptures splashed and spilled, sent flying as she huddled behind her improvised shield. There was a loud bang, a rush of air, and an explosion so powerful it sent the table rocketing backwards. Amante was taken with it, her senses stolen by the stunning power of that single shot. On instinct, Amante thrust both feet outward, uncurling hard. She tumbled through the iris-like aperture that led to her corridor, the oval table crashing back into the room she had left. A muffled animal roar came from behind it as she got to her feet, bloody and dazed. Her hearing was swirling back from the ringing impact that had taken it, clearing enough for her to make out guttural syllables on the cusp of understanding. To a fire warrior, the grunting dialect would have been unintelligible, but all Watercast Tau prided themselves on being able to decipher even the most alien of languages. Since news had reached her of the coming invasion, Amante had studied the Imperial tongue well.
"This way!" the creature was shouting. "More vermin and more tunnels behind!"
Amante creased her brow hard, bringing a measure of clarity to her senses. Darting left, she half staggered and half ran down the corridor towards the communal quarters where the subsystem's Earthcast work teams dwelt. Sounds of crashing destruction came from behind her, stark light sending shadows dancing madly ahead. Halfway down the tunnel was her oral workroom, the gateway to the audience chambers, and beyond that, the prototype laboratories of the Earthcast. There was still a chance she could get out alive, patch a message through to the Firecast, maybe even alert the Earthcast in time for them to bring their defences online. She could still contribute to the greater good one last time. But the monstrous things were close behind her, and getting closer. First, she would have to reach the pulse pistol she had secreted in her meditation chamber. Sergeant Numitor stormed through the gloom of the Tau Hab complex, delicate porcelain crunching under the heavy ceramite tread of his boots. There had been a small Tau lifeform up ahead, an unarmed civilian making fierce sounds as it tried to escape. Numitor had followed it at speed. Likely it would lead him to its fellows, or attempt to raise the alarm. The sergeant saw a circular door ahead, iris enclosed at his approach. There was a flicker of motion beyond it. He wrenched a boxy sculpture thing from a nearby shelf and hurled it so it caught in the closing petals of the door, jamming it open. Lowering his shoulder, he charged, pushing a half-second burst of thrust through his pack to bolster his momentum. Numitor struck the jammed door apparatus with such force the entire thing came loose in a crash of splintering xenoplastics. He scrambled through with half the doorframe caught upon his backpack. Growling in irritation, the sergeant reached back with his power fist to tear it free in a juddering mess of splinters.
"You shall not escape, Xenos!" he shouted, storming forward with anger writ large upon his features.
The Tau civilian was lying close at hand, fallen on the far side of the room amidst a confusion of shattered plastics. Its dark almond eyes were open wide in some alien approximation of terror. Numitor's lips curled back involuntarily at the sight of it. The Tau was little larger than a Kalthan youth, with a malnourished look to it. Its long, frail fingers reached towards him imploringly. It smelled of meadow flowers over the antiseptic tang of bleach, and the beat of its heart stuttered on the cusp of his hearing.
"Wait, Sire Warrior," it said in perfect High Gothic. "I am no threat to you. I am regarded poorly, even amongst my own kind."
Numitor's brow furrowed. The creature's voice was strangely human. Somehow it was speaking with the tones of a young woman, and with a Macragian accent at that.
"You have the bearing of a knight, sire," it said, its accent becoming even more refined. "An honoured and noble warrior tradition. I see it in the heraldic devices you wear. They are the marks of your forefathers, are they not?"
Numitor raised his pistol, debating whether or not to waste another bolt. The creature knew too much about them already, that was plain.
"Would your forefathers be proud to see you cut down a helpless, unarmed female?" asked the young Tau, her honeyed voice all innocence, but for the barest hint of reproach. "Would the king amongst kings you must venerate be impressed? He whose code you follow?"
Numitor thought of Rabute Gilliman in that instant, of how the Primarch would have acted in this situation. In truth, he was unsure. Amante had the creature's eyes fixed on hers, its repulsive face twisted in crude caricature as warring emotions passed across it.
She could do this. She had it partially entangled in her full lasso already.
Her hand crept slowly, painfully, to subtly press-click the cabinet where she had hidden her pulse pistol. At this range, it would take a single pull of the trigger, especially if she was lucky enough to make a headshot. The human warrior was mighty indeed, but slow of wit. It wore its psyche plainly on its features. Even though it was bestial in appearance, it was dressed in armor that bore honor markings and medallions, giving hints of a warrior brotherhood that valued glory and accomplishment. It was a simple, unsubtle angle she had taken, to play to the monster's twisted sense of justice, but it was proving effective. Already the creature was hesitating, bound by the contradictions of its own value system. It was as the Golden Ambassador had once said, notions and codes can stay a killer's hand as effectively as any net. Perhaps it would be enough.
"I am nothing to a lord such as you," she continued, her deft fingers finding the handle of the pulse pistol and curling to bring it inch by inch into her grip. "Our own warrior caste does not match itself against harmless civilians. Instead, they seek to engage the strongest foes they can find, the better to win true glory."
The brute was listening. If she could hold its attention for a few more moments. Numitor stared down at the Tau civilian. The creature was a weakling, almost despicable, but part of him had to concede it had a point. If the Space Marines were to kill the planet's civilians as well as its military, the campaign on Dal-Ith would soon grind to a halt. Perhaps his energies were better spent elsewhere.
"Many of our warrior caste dwell just beyond this chamber," the young female continued, "worthier opponents for a true knight who values honor and skill. Would you instead choose to sully your hands with the blood of unarmed civilians?"
She brought a blocky pistol out from nowhere, whipping it towards Numitor's head.
"Yes," said Cato Sicarius, barreling past his fellow sergeant to stamp the creature hard into the floor. Numitor heard its ribs break into flinders within its chest. Sicarius spat on its corpse, pushing onwards into the gloom. Shaking himself free of the creature's mental manipulation, Numitor set off after his brother, the clatter and stamp of charging ultramarines close behind him. A thousand admiring eyes were fixed on Commander Farsight as he walked stiffly to the disc-like hover drone at the heart of the Hollow Theatre. A million more watched him over the cast net. Shadow Sun, to Farsight's immense relief, was not amongst those present. Ovoid transmitter drones triangulated the footage of the commander's every movement. The ramrod-straight backs of his officers straightened a little further as he passed. It was a mark of great respect that they attended in person, instead of by holographic representation. He could see the water caste's claims already. The pupil of Puretide descends once more to dispense his wisdom. The hero of Arkunasha gathers his chosen warriors to repel the vicious human invaders from the sept world of Dal-Ith. The truth of his recent near-death, however, they kept hidden. The hollow glory of the moment was bitter in Farsight's mouth, but it was nothing to the agonies coursing across his body. Tight fists of pain filled his lungs, clenching with each step. Even his paws hurt. He kept his expression studiously neutral. To show weakness now was to dishonor the Firecast and to do direct harm to the morale of the entire war effort. The chamber's central hover drone dipped as he approached, a small mercy that allowed him to step onto it with relative ease. He was glad of the rigid curving spar holding the data suite array and held onto it for support, stifling a painful cough as he straightened his back. He scanned the eyes of the Firecast officers in the front row. None had creases of concern on their features. He had not shown weakness yet. Tutor Sharkanthas was amongst them, his face as sour and unlikable as ever, but the rest of them practically glowed with pride, thrilled by the honour of being so close to a pupil of Master Puretide. So far, so good. "Greetings in the name of the Tauva, comrades," said Farsight softly.
His words carried across the theatre, and the massed ranks of officers responded in kind, each making the sign of the greater good. On the balcony, high above them, the ethereal Aun Dreka nodded once. Flanking him were the images of the absent ethereals Aon Tefan and Aon Tepia, attending by hollow presence, the unwavering attention of the two females almost as daunting as that of the delegate attending in person. Aon Drekker gestured with thin fingers for Farsight to continue.
"War has come to us once more, my friends."
There was a susurration of excitement in the audience. Farsight saw the glow of bloodlust on the faces of many officers in the front row. It was held in check, but present nonetheless.
"Here we fight a race possessed of great resource. Do not be fooled by the paucity of troops they have committed thus far. By my estimations, we have encountered but a fraction of their strength. Worse still, their starships are using unknown methods to punch through our outlying fleets and deploy their troops on core sept soil."
Behind Farsight, a complex holographic array glowed into bright life. Poor Okais of the Watercast had adopted the commander's suggestions as to how the Firecast best assimilated information, and the multipart display was fashioned and compartmentalized like the control screens of a battlesuit. The central section showed footage of ornate Imperial craft barging through the void. Each boasted cannons large and numerous enough to shatter a Krute warsphere. Distribution arrays showed the fleet's entry point into Tau space, a glowing wound in the fabric of space. Wedge-fronted Imperial craft pushed out from the roiling rift like swords bursting through a split gut.
"We do not know what strange technology they use to penetrate straight into the first sphere," said Farsight. "The Earthcast have not seen its like. Yet, that is a riddle for another day. The humans are here now, upon Dal'ith, and in ever greater numbers. That is what matters."
The Firecast officers nodded, many thinning their lips in signs of aggression. Farsight felt the heat of their keenness. In their hearts, they wanted to be out there with the Carders on the front line. But their minds sought wisdom and unity first, and they paid rapt attention to every word of their commander's brief. It was a sight to make even an ethereal proud.
"So far, we have held the invaders at bay," continued Farsight. "The Aircast have maintained overall control of low orbit, and our own Sky Ray gunships have added their might to the struggle for Dal'ith's airspace. Over a single rotar, hundreds of the rudimentary aircraft that serve as the Gwela Sky Force have been shot down."
The holograms behind the commander showed a textbook Aircast deployment, staggered picket lines of craft linked by a perfect distribution of aerial drones. Footage of an Imperial squadron slid into focus, veering away from the trawling net of Aircast hunters, only to be taken out with grim efficiency by streaking Seeker missiles from below. The scenes cut expertly to the wallowing, fat-bellied shape of an Imperial bomber, its cargo bays pregnant with death. A squadron of Razor Shark fighters emerged from behind a sensor tower, quad-ion rifles cutting the wings from the giant aircraft even as it disgorged a clumsy tumble of cylindrical bombs. Interceptor drones detached from the Sun Sharks in the fighters' wake, diving low after the falling bombs and detonating them in a string of harmless explosions across the sky. A spasm of pain passed through Farsight's body, and he felt his spine twitch hard. He turned the involuntary movement into a half-twist, making it look like he was taking a moment to watch the footage playing behind him. Two Razor Sharks harried a darting Imperial flyer that had been separated from its squadron, a blunt-winged craft with a class designation that translated as Thunderbolt. The Tau strike fighters neatly bisected the fleeing aircraft, their underslung guns turning its wreckage into little more than scattering debris as they traced a spiral path around its plummeting descent. The footage did not show the mighty Gueron Shark craft that had dived headlong towards Dal'ith's surface, pugnacious attack ships that smashed holes through the aircast defences with the ease of a Krutox punching through thin ice. In places, it seemed the Imperial gunships were actively seeking collision, forcing the matrix of Tau fighters to evade in disarray. There was plenty more material highlighting the sheer strength of the Gwaeron Shah attack, but little of it need reach Farsight's fellow officers. Not yet, at any rate. Morale could be a delicate thing.
The Earth Cast's transmotive network is working at near peak efficiency, continued Farsight.
The holograms showed sleek silver carriages disgorging pristine Fire Warrior strike teams, the scorched skies of Gelbrin City behind them.
By conveying Carda support to each assailed hexadome as and when the Imperials strike, we are quickly neutralizing the pods that form the Gwaeron Shah's favored invasion vectors.
A veteran officer made the sign of will to speak from the front row. Farsight unfurled a palm in return.
It is a fine thing to see the invasion in hand, said a tall, distinguished Tau veteran in full parade dress.
Commander Shah Vostos, an old friend of Farsight's. Despite his age, he made the deferential gesture of the inquiring student, finger curled and head cocked to one side.
Might I ask as to the Water Cast's efforts?
Of course, Commander Shavastos, said Farsight, grateful for the interjection.
It was important the other officers felt they could ask questions of their leader, especially in a time of open war, and his old Arkun Ashan ally had thrown open the floor.
The Water Cast maintains the flow of critical intelligence across Dal Ith and beyond. Many of these holograms will be broadcast to the population at large, in order to lessen the psychological impact of the invasion. I am given to understand some of them include a handsome young commander in a rather striking red battlesuit.
Quiet mirth trickled through the Hollow Theater. They had all heard of the human flaw of vanity and found it endlessly entertaining. Even the ethereal Aun Dreka smiled, recognizing that humor was sometimes a necessary tool. Though Farsight grinned ruefully, he felt nothing but aches and exhaustion behind his mask of levity. For a moment, he let a fraction of his pain show. The room fell silent.
The castes fight in unison, for the ethereals guide and watch over us all, said Farsight,
his words carrying the ring of conviction as he made the opened hands of unbound respect.
As it is now, and as it ever shall be, with the unbreakable shield of true unity, we will repel these invaders. Together, we prevail, no matter the legions they throw at us, and those legions are manifold.
The holograms behind Farsight became the view outside Gelbrin's serried domes, flickering and fading to monochrome, as if taken from an ancient source. A deft touch from the Watercast, intended to highlight the anachronistic, hidebound nature of the foes marching from the cavernous holds of Imperial Bulklanders. Rank upon rank of Gwela soldiers strode forward, armoured in the grey-green of dead vegetation. Their faces were waxy masks of ignorance and contempt. Held against each human shoulder was a primitive rifle, a weak and inefficient laser weapon, much like those the Tau had encountered on the far side of the Damocles Gulf. A vicious-looking blade jutted from each rifle's barrel, as if the bearers thought of their firearms as spears rather than as precision tools of ranged warfare. The Firecast, too, carried blades, known as bonding knives. They represented unity and hope, symbolizing the sacred team bond of the Tal Lysera. They were rarely, if ever, drawn from their scabbards.
By a warrior's tools you shall know him, quoted Farsight solemnly. Just as the Firecast are defined by the hero's mantle we all aspire to master, the Imperial soldiery is represented by the crude weapons you see here. In their hearts, they do not intend to engage at range, but to scrabble around in murderous close-quarters combat, stabbing and slashing. The most perfunctory of uniforms is the only thing separating them from their primitive, ape-like ancestors.
A ripple of disquiet filled the Hollow Theater.
Such a barbaric race has no place upon a core sept world,
continued Farsight.
They have no role in the universe other than to be brought to heel, culled and consigned to slow oblivion.
There were murmurs of assent. Many turned into cries of awe and confusion as the drone camera hologram panned back. Behind the serried ranks of Gwela troopers strode immense, broad-shouldered war engines with gigantic cannons in place of arms. They were crude effigies built in mockery of the noble battlesuit, colossi born of a race that respected only brute strength.
These bipedal war engines are classified by their owners as God machines, said Farsight. They may appear indomitable at first glance, but already one has been neutralized by precision strike from the Manta missile destroyers of the illustrious Admiral Li Mao Teng.
In the holograms behind Farsight, a burning Goliath toppled onto the indigo wasteland outside Via Meshla. The bright fires of its demise threw the commander into silhouette.
A warrior who wears his strength openly is easily countered,
quoted Commander Starflame from the midst of the audience.
Just so, said Farsight. And though six of these behemoths are inbound upon our cities, they are predictable. It is not these engines of war the Firecast must seek to counter, but the Gui Ron Sha, those warriors the humans call Space Marines, whose strikes are sudden and powerful. Their insertion craft are simple enough, but mercilessly effective. Though it pains me to say it, these Space Marines are experts in the application of pure force at a single point.
At this, the hologram showed the angular teardrop of an Imperial dropcraft slamming through the glass curve of a hexadome. Upon impact, its hull split into five sections, two blue-armored Gueron Char emerging from each opening with sidearms blazing. Fire warriors positioned amongst the rubble were cut down in a series of messy explosions, though the watercast data teams had taken the liberty of editing out the blood.
The Gueron Sha wear armor that cannot be pierced by the shot of the pulse rifle, nor shattered by the salvos of the burst cannon. Yet their weakness is as clear as a mountain stream. They are too few in number to effect more than shock assaults. Once deployed, these strike forces are committed to a single war zone, unless their air cover pulls them out.
Farsight saw many solemn nods in the hollow theater and no few expressions of disdain.
By forcing the Space Marines to launch the spear of their assault and then ensuring our cadres withdraw before their blow can fall, we rob the Gueron Sha of the military targets they are so keen to destroy. The Aircast and our own fighter squadrons will work in tandem, stranding each Gueron Sha attack without hope of recovery.
A wise plan, Commander Farsight,
said Commander Bravestorm from the front row.
It is typical of the Imperial mindset to trust in strength alone. I myself fought a flightless battlesuit equivalent clad in armor thicker than an orca's hull. It was powerful indeed, but slow to maneuver.
Seizing the opportunity, Farsight eye-flicked the hollow to show drone-captured footage of Bravestorm's triumph over the Imperial Walker. He complemented it by appending scenes of battlesuits blasting holes right through the torsos of Imperial shock troops.
They are resilient, these Space Marines, but they can be killed. Equip your suits with plasma rifles and fusion blasters wherever possible. As a guideline, any time you face Gueron Sha, treat them not as infantry, but as squadrons of enemy tanks.
He paused a moment to let the concept sink in.
We have the right weapons to overcome these warmongering trespassers. We are gathering knowledge of their weaknesses. There is no reason why we cannot repel the humans within a few rota of focused effort.
A chorus of approval filled the auditorium, many of the Firecast officers making the sign of unalloyed assent.
The efforts of Commanders Brightsword and Bravestorm thus far have been exemplary, continued Farsight. As a result, recent aircast sweeps have confirmed that the Gweran Shah have been repelled from Gelbrin City.
At this, cheers filled the hollow theatre. On the balcony, Aon Drekka inclined his head in a subtle gesture of disapproval. Farsight made the lateral line of silence, and his fellow officers fell still.
They have been repelled for now, said Farsight, anger simmering in his voice. But a new attack gathers outside Gelbrin in force. We have slowed it down with missile strikes from the hills, hunted and put down their outriders with overlapping sweeps of our stealth teams. But the main body remains intact, and still numbers in the tens of millions.
A pulse of pain twitched in his lungs at the thought, making his eyes widen involuntarily. He saw a shadow of concern cross the faces of Bravestorm and Shavastos. They had learned to be perceptive over the years.
We must study them, stall them, break them apart, and then...
Farsight's breath caught for a moment.
And then bring down the sword. They have great numbers still to commit, in orbit as well as planet side. Yet we have an entire empire to draw upon, able to focus its efforts fully on the conflict at hand.
The holograms behind Farsight showed the wider Tau Empire, its space lanes highlighted gold. Assets were inbound from a dozen worlds.
We will observe the Imperial Army's strengths, exploit its blindness, optimize our countermeasures, and defeat it beyond question. The killing blow will fall again and again until this new chapter in the ascendance of the Tauva is lit with glory.
The footage behind Farsight showed 100 battlesuits descending from a crystal blue sky, sunlight glinting from every burnished plane. They opened fire in blistering unison. The atmosphere in the room was tense with the thrill of anticipation, dry tinder waiting for a final spark. A voice cut through the jubilant atmosphere like an ice-cold knife.
No!
An athletic female warrior emerged from the iris door at the far end of the hollow theatre, tall and proud. Her sleek head was crested with a red scalp lock that trailed behind her like a whip, the bands upon it symbols denoting a major military victory. There were many, many bands crowning her smooth pate. Commander Shadow Sun had arrived. Farsight felt his nerves jolt as his former teammate, Shadow Sun, emerged into the light. Despite the bulk of her signature XV-22 stealth battlesuit, she loped down the centre of the hollow theatre with the grace of a hunting cat. Her scalp lock had even more honorific bands than he had seen in the latest watercast stills. Behind her came an entourage, three specialist drones and two Shazui, their own stealth battlesuits compact but imposing. Farsight noticed wisps of steam emanating from her fusion blasters, still cooling from some recent engagement. Even O'Shacera was not unscrupulous enough to have fired them before her grand entrance just for effect. At least, not the Kaoyan Shaz he remembered from Mount Kanji. Every one of the officers in the Hollow Theatre had turned to look at the visitor in their midst, whispers of surprise rustling through them like wind through a field of crops. The breach of etiquette was quickly forgotten, washed away by Shadow Sun's aura of sheer confidence and self-belief. She strode up to the command dais and interposed herself between Farsight and the audience, standing head and shoulders taller than him in her battlesuit and largely blocking him from sight. Farsight looked up at Aon Drekka, his blood uncomfortably hot in his veins, but the ethereal merely made a gentle beckoning gesture to proceed.
Commander Shadow Sun, said Farsight to his fellow officers back. This is an unexpected pleasure. Please take a seat. My address is almost complete.
O'Shacera ignored him.
The time for talk is over, she said, without turning, her stern tones cutting the last of the audience's susurrus into silence.
Optimized Kalyan plans have long been in place upon Dal'ith. We should enact them, not stall in order to devise more. Our people are dying, so now we act. As of this moment, the Firecast Reserve Carders join those in the field.
Farsight heard not a single voice raised in contradiction. He looked to the holograph display behind him, but it was blank. All focus was on Shadow Sun.
The Firecast is the current target of these Imperial shock troops,
Osha Serra continued.
So we shall relocate into less populous areas. Lure them into traps that minimize collateral damage. We wage a mobile war following the planet's rotation so that we remain upon its dark side at all times.
A few mutters of assent came from the audience, dotted with louder outbursts of approval.
We engineer confusion. We draw the enemy out. Piece by piece, we crush him in our grip. Starflame, you will form the polar point of the pincer to my equatorial. Oh, Sarakan, you will perform breaker strikes until relieved. Oh, Soara, put some cohesion into the Pryen refugees and rejoin Bravestorm's retaliation carders at Dal Rio.
Farsight frowned, his outward expression the merest shadow of the storm raging inside. What did she think she was doing? How could she betray him like this? Their friendly rivalry had turned sour many years ago, and she had been distant and cold ever since. But this public division was a new low. The feelings catching in his throat were so intense, Farsight had to force down the urge to cough. Unbidden, his hand strayed to the hilt of his ceremonial sword as Osha Serra outlined her orders. Gone was the introspective strategist he had grown to admire, the ever-patient warrioress who had sat in the snows of Mount Kanji for long days until her prey passed within striking distance. This was not the Shadow Sun famous across the Empire for her cold and deadly deliberations. Here, instead, was a paragon of the Code of Fire, alive with the thrill of delivering a long-planned Kalyan, the certain and lethal denouement of a carefully laid trap. Farsight told himself it was compassion of a sort that had driven her to humiliate him in such a fashion. Tau lives were being lost. If she could minimize those tragedies with decisiveness and efficiency, she would do so without hesitation. How their roles had changed.
Too much time has been spent here, continued Osha Serra. If any refinements to these plans are necessary, we can effect them over the CardaNet as we deploy. Move out!
Shadow Sun strode back down the center aisle of the Hollow Theater towards the exit, her entourage in her wake. Farsight found his fist clenching as a full half of his emergency conclave stood and followed her out, already talking into headpiece beads to coordinate their forces. His skin burned, and this time not because he had exited the heel sphere too soon.
That will be all,
he said to the uncertain officers that remained.
I have appended details of your individual briefings via data transmission. We shall combine our efforts with Commander Shadow Sun as best we can. For the greater good. For the greater good, echoed Farsight's commanders.
But the fire he had lit inside them was no longer there. Tutor Shakanthas was among the last to leave the Hollow Theater. He had lingered long to savor the taste of Farsight's embarrassment, and fought hard to keep a smile from spreading across his features as he walked past a pair of Firecast officers earnestly discussing which of their two leaders had the better approach to victory. Dal'ith's defenders might stand divided, they might even suffer for it at the hands of the Imperial invaders, but if it meant that Farsight lost enough status to be removed from command, then Tutor Shakanthas considered it more than worth it. Ever since mentoring the vaunted prodigy in the Mont'ir Battledome, Tutor Shakanthas had seen the peril Oshova posed to the Tau'va. Since the inception of the Code of Fire, every cadet had followed the same path, and to break it, to show preference to one individual over the whole, was to invite disaster. For the Firecast to entertain the concept that a single young warrior knew better than his tutors, and by extension, the Ethereals, was deeply wrong. In the corridor ahead, tutor Sharkanthas saw Oveza of the Earthcast stumping along on his thick legs, struggling to match the confident stride of Commander Bravestorm. The genius-level scientist was well known to Sharkanthas from the rust deserts of Arkunashar. His prototypes had helped Farsight turn a disaster of a campaign into a hard-fought but glorious victory. The 10-year campaign had seen Elveza promoted to Oveza, given the honorific name Stone Dragon, and elevated to the upper tiers of his caste. In terms of intellect, he was a genius without doubt, yet in terms of politics, he was an oblivious buffoon.
It is, of course, possible to achieve greater energy yield, but risky in the extreme, Oveza was saying to Bravestorm. You say even a direct hit from a fusion blaster failed to neutralize this war machine?
Tutor Sharkanthas accelerated his stride as the two continued their conversation. He transmitted a greeting blip to Oveza's data wand, simultaneously activating the recorded discus hidden in the flat of his palm.
Ah, Tutor Sharkanthas, said Oveza, his flat slab of a face broken by a gentle smile as he turned in the corridor. I see you survived the Argap Plateau withdrawal.
Bravestorm held up the open palms of welcome.
An honor to see you, Tutor, he said,
his veil of politeness not quite covering his irritation at being interrupted.
And congratulations on having fought alongside Commander Farsight. Yes, said Tutor Sharkanthas. Akunasha, a great victory. Perhaps 10 Tau Sire too late, but notable nonetheless. A moment of your time, Stone Dragon. Certainly, said Oveza, with a distant look in his eye.
Commander Bravestorm made the sign of future paths crossing and strode off down the corridor.
Were you present at Farsight's briefing? Asked the tutor. I was. It was a rare privilege to be present at a Firecast gathering. A rousing call to arms, was it not? It was informative on a surface level, said Oveza. Though I prefer to dig deeper. Imperial technology is of great interest to the Earthcast. This war offers an unparalleled chance to study it. Of course. And Farsight's skill as an orator is impressive, you must agree. One need only have witnessed today's inspiring address to see that, or his famous speech to the Aircast at Zephyr Peak. I fear I am not qualified to judge, but yes, they tell me Commander Farsight's skills at diplomacy are highly advanced.
Would you say they are the equal of the water caste?
It is possible. A commander's skill sets are admirable.
Skill sets, you say? Do you mean those outside the remit of the Firecast?
A moment of awkward silence passed between them. As Tutor Sharkanthas had hoped, the Stone Dragon could not help but fill it.
Commander Farsight is a singular individual, and I respect him greatly. Only yesterday he restarted a malfunctioning battlesuit systems whilst it was waterlogged in the Gelbrin Reservoir. That is a feat which most worker-level weapons scientists would find difficult to achieve.
How illuminating, said Tutor Sharkanthas,
his eyes narrowing. There it was, the chink in the prodigy's armor, laid wide open by a trusted friend.
With such talents in the arts of the other castes, would you say that Commander Farsight's true nature is Vashya?
Oveza started back as if you'd been slapped.
I have little expertise on such matters,
stammered the scientist.
Oh, would you excuse me, tutor? I have weapons tests to oversee, and Commander Bravestorm's prototype request to investigate.
Tutor Shak Kanthas watched Oveza bow, turn, and hurry away, his lips pressed into a tight smile. The stone dragon clearly thought Oshova to be between spheres, even if he lacked the courage to say it outright. How fitting that Farsight's threat to the Tau Va should be undone by his own genius.